February 16th was the birthday of teleteachers? Are you kidding me?
I am not. And it was a decision that, in retrospect, I can't believe I made. But yes, it was very quickly after leaving my last company.
Obviously, you have a passion for doing what teleteachers does. And you also have a very interesting desire to do things on the entrepreneurial side of the continuum, if you will. In my mind, I like to use continuums all the time. You know, just draw a line where on the far left, you got bureaucrat. On the far right, you've got entrepreneur. And that bureaucrat would love to work at the DMV and know exactly what they're doing on Wednesday at 3 o'clock. And the pure entrepreneur would like to maybe have a clue what they're doing the first half hour of every day. But after that, they aren't exactly sure. It sounds like you're definitely on that entrepreneurial side of the continuum.
Absolutely. I'm certainly motivated by challenge and adventure and freedom.
Yeah. Well, and that's the key, which is freedom, you know, and it sounds like you're intentionally going out to not only build freedom for yourself, which is aligned with your personal brand and what you want, the who you are so you can be it, but you're also creating freedom for an entire group of people, the speech therapists that work with you to serve school districts or other entities around the country. And so I'm guessing freedom is a key part of the brand that you're creating for teleteachers.
It is. Yes. One of our core values is we accept the challenge. And, you know, there are certainly challenges that come up with delivering services to schools remotely.
There are challenges getting started. There are challenges attracting the right types of people. There's challenges attracting perhaps venture capital. Have you needed to seek venture capital to begin this entire company?
Actually, no. I put seed money into this company myself and I'm actively raising a Series A round right now.
Okay, cool. So a big part of that Series A round is having a good, compelling story that is not only talking to the school. Well, actually, in the last episode, we talked about two distinct audiences, school districts and speech pathologists.
I can help you with that, DB.
Well, thank you. You know, I sometimes the words get hung up somewhere around my soft palate, you know. Anyway, but there's actually a third increasingly critical part or audience that you need to be addressing, and that's potential investors. And you just mentioned the Series A round of capital so that you can expand, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let me tell you, the arguments that attract and engage school districts are not the arguments and story that attract speech therapists. Those certainly are not the arguments that attract dollars out of the very tight hands of professional investors. So how are you approaching that very jaded, very professional, very, I'm going to call them Vulcan in the Star Trekian way of, you know, live long and prosper. We only think logically. You can come tell me the biggest sob story you want. I'm not buying it. However, if you show me numbers and those numbers are impressive, now you've got my attention. How are you taking the story you have for the previous two audiences and starting to tell it in a branded way for this critically important third audience?
Sure. Well, I think the story starts, you know, very similarly to the other audiences. You know, we recognize the problem. The problem is that there are so many children that don't have access to speech language pathology, and they need it. Not only do they need it, they're required to have it. And from an investor standpoint, that helps depict a motivated buyer. So we are working in schools who are actively searching for a solution. They have the budgets. Over 50% of communities across the country don't have enough speech language pathologists to meet the needs of students. So I think it certainly starts with the story of the market opportunity and why this is so important. And then, you know, going into the experience of the company, and, you know, I'm fortunate that I've spent 5 years in this industry. And so proof of concept has already been established. You know, I'm really thankful for the lessons that I learned in selling and delivering this service. And so as I pitch the vision of teleteachers to investors, you know, I'm also pitching, you know, what I have to bring to the table and what my experience can mean in this startup ed tech space.
You got my attention by saying 50%. When you can pull out a number, especially one that's at or north of 50%, you're going to get anybody's attention. Add to the fact that your product is mandated. Is it strictly state mandate or is it also federal as well?
Federal.
Ooh, so it's a federally mandated requirement of all school districts that they provide these services. So it's basically telling any investor that we have a market and we can prove it because the feds created it for us.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's got to be pretty attractive. So sensitive question here. You don't have to answer. Are you actively going in and selling and competing against your former company?
I am. And it's, it's a different dynamic because it's, this baby that I created 5 years ago. They've certainly grown and evolved, but I believe in the value add of teleteachers so strongly that it's not an us versus them kind of pitch to schools. And there's also an opportunity in the telehealth space. We are still, and our consumers are still in this awareness and education phase. So we haven't even hit, significant adoption. So I do think that there's a big market here. And, the more that companies, even competitive companies, can help educate the market, the better it's going to be for each of us anyway.
Did you hear what she just said, nonfiction branders? She's saying, yeah, I have to go in and pitch against my sister, but I don't have to do it in a way that denigrates her. I instead point out how what I and we are doing better, why we're doing it better, how we're doing it better. And I can demonstrate that story in a way that doesn't reflect poorly on my sister who I'm fighting against or competing against, but actually is all about presenting what I do in a positive, forward-looking way that people will go, oh, I get it. Your sister's nice too, but I choose you for the reasons you've now introduced me to. You've told me the reasons why I should go with you instead of the reasons why you shouldn't go with my sister.
And don't get me wrong, my number one strength on Strength Finders is competition. So I certainly want to win every deal, but there's a way to do it very tactfully and to unite with other companies in this space for the greater good.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding, and we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus.
A true competitor would love to win every single time, but a successful business is happy not to win when the win does not align with their business, the way it runs and the way it operates and its brand. For example, there's a story, and forgive me if I get any of the details wrong, but Walmart wanted Snapper, the guys who make lawnmowers in America, to have a line that they sell at Walmart. And the guys at Snapper said, sorry, Walmart, can't do it. Why? Because they wanted to keep it made in America. To serve Walmart's order, they would have to go overseas to fulfill the order. They also built their brand with a tight association with its distributor network. If they were to suddenly say, we're going to sell some of our stuff through Walmart and that might eat into your profits, distributors, what are the distributors going to do? Either be mad or take on your competitors' lines as a supplement or just drop you altogether. So Snapper, in the face of what had to be many millions dollar order, said, no thanks, that's not aligned with us. It's not aligned with our brand, and it's not aligned with our goal. Our goal is to provide jobs for people in America, to have our dealers be successful, our distributors be successful, and to do this in a way that supports all of us in a sustainable, scalable way. Snapper said no to Walmart. A competitor would say, I want that win. A smart competitor says, I'm not running that race. Are you a smart competitor, Emily?
Absolutely. I hope to be.
Well, I think you are, because you've already demonstrated in what you're talking about that you've come up with codified, written down core values that are not just in your head, but it sounds like they're coming straight out of the mouths of your associates as well. Is that true?
It is. You know, for us to be so unified and aligned on our vision, I, from day one, wanted to make our values a priority. And that has been the single most influential piece of this company and of our success to date. Just that unity and that alignment, not only with our therapists, but extending into, as you just talked about, the customers that we're choosing to partner with.
Can you quickly run us through your core values and how you, like, pretend I'm a VC and I've got this big pot of money that's just waiting to pour into your pocket. But I ask you a question about, okay, what do you guys actually stand for? What do you say?
Well, our number one core value is students first. And I know that every company in the education space says that. But the way that we live that is we look at every scenario, every child that we're trying to serve and say, how do we serve them better? Certainly through the technology, we have tremendous opportunity to maybe see them more frequently or to have a more engaging session. And it takes a really fired up therapist who truly wants to put that student first instead of check out for the day to get creative and to bring that opportunity to the student. There are ways that we're putting students first in, you know, in this company. And along with that, we accept the challenge is another one of our values. And I think they certainly go hand in hand. One of the things that's not talked about enough in our telehealth industry is how difficult it can be to begin teletherapy programs with schools who are hesitant or who may not be super excited about this program. And so going in with open communication and starting that from day one, where we build a relationship, we address challenges that would get in the way of us delivering services to students. And we're bold. As a company, we are not afraid of these challenges. And that's a way that we are going to be able to really execute our vision is by addressing things head on, having bold conversations that puts the students first.
Okay, so I've heard two things that fit my definition of what I call the key three. Every business in my world needs to have a key three. Your first is students first. Now, those two words with a period on the end is the beginning of a paragraph or a page or a chapter of story that you can tell. The second word I heard that was kind of that brand level, key three level word was bold. You know, it talks to the way you approach things. And bold is a different word than strong or confident. Bold is like getting up there and standing in front of the arrows as they're coming in saying, I can take this. I'm not afraid of this. I can address it. So that's very cool. I'm looking for a third to make your key three. So you got students first, you got bold. What's your third word or phrase that defines the key three for teleteachers?
We have six core values.
Oh my God. I'll pick your favorite.
Well, my favorite is live inspired.
Live inspired. What does that mean?
So that means, you know, for our team, we are more than the job that we're doing. Corresponding with the work and how difficult it is to change people's thinking on how we're delivering services through an online platform. You know, it's important to be completely fulfilled outside of work so that we can show up for our team every day and, you know, just really contribute to this vision and to this mission. And that can't happen unless we are very inspired people.
Hey, nonfiction branders, did you know I wrote a book? Well, I did, and it's called Rotoma, the ROI of Social Media Top of Mind. I wrote it with my colleague Spencer X. Smith, and it's all about Rotoma, an acronym that means Return on Top of Mind Awareness. Best-selling author and NYU Stern School of Business professor Scott Galloway called it a book that starches the fluff from social media and helps managers allocate capital and find the unicorn among unicorns, ROI. And chief content officer at Marketing Pro
Groffs, Anne Hanley said, "This isn't just a practical way to think about the return on social media. It's also a spot-on, accurate way to reframe your social efforts." Check out all the 5-star reviews on Amazon by searching Rotoma, R-O-T-O-M-A. Pick up your copy today and start building your personal, professional, and small business brand the Rotoma way.
I did not want to take your 6 and make them 3, but there's a reason that I'm a stickler about making it 3, and that is the ability to remember them anytime, anywhere, at the drop of a hat. So if someone asked me, the United States of America, what makes the United States of America unique among all the countries of the world, I would say life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. When we are true to those 3 ideas, our country is the exceptional country on the globe. When we vary from those things, everyone around the world is going, hey, what's going on? What's happening? And I think that's very true. I worked on Coca-Cola as a young copywriter, and they had 3 words, literally, sociability, refreshment, and authenticity. And authenticity actually came first. So it was authenticity, refreshment, and sociability. What does that mean? I could go on for hours about what those specific words mean. But the fact that I remember those darn words 25 years later is a testament to the strength of having 3 key ideas at the very foundation of your brand. So as a personal brand, or as call it my quasi-company brand, Collaborator Creative, but it's really me because I'm its only employee. It's a personal brand / small business. My words are collaborative. Why? Because I work with other people. Creative. Why? Because that's what I do. You're not going to get a spreadsheet from me ever. And the third word is provocative, which is I want to not play back what you've just said, but I want to throw it back a little bit faster and make you go, whoa, or even poke you in the eye a little bit. Or in the past, I've called it, sometimes I like to punch your baby in the face, because sometimes that baby needs to be tested in a meaningful way. And I see you smiling, and I hope you take that the right way, Emily, because I don't punch babies in the face. I'm just saying that I test pet ideas in a way that either confirms the validity of them or bursts the bubble of them. And frankly, not everybody wants that. Some people just want me to take notes or take their letter and make it look better or make it read better or make a speech sound better. And I can do that, but that's not my best use. You come for me when you want someone who's going to provoke you in a fun, interesting, challenging way, right? So students first, bold, live inspired. If I said you can only have 3 out of those 6, are you happy with those 3? Oh, she's hemming and hawing. She's cogitating.
Yeah, you're causing me to think.
Ooh, am I provoking?
A little bit. I like it. Wow. You know, I would probably, although I do love Live Inspired, I would probably drop that. And well, let me take a step back. So I was thinking one of our values, which could certainly make the top 3, is hold the fluff.
Say that again. I think it dropped out a second.
Hold the fluff.
Hold the fluff. What does that mean?
It means we have really transparent conversations with each other, that we provide feedback without holding back. And, you know, this one, I actually wanted to change it a little bit to talk about, you know, kind communication, or, you know, right now I'm reading the book Radical Candor. And so I'm really working on communication. And I brought it to my team and I said, you know, I'm thinking about maybe changing the name of this. And they're like, this is our favorite one.
Well, exactly, because it cuts through, dare I say, the fluff.
Right.
Again, this is me doing a tiny bit of research. I see that according to the American Academy of Speech Correction, that 40% of the original members of the American Academy of Speech Correction were male in 1989. That number, when it comes to speech therapists, is really about 6% male now. So you're living in a very female-dominated area. I want to be fair, and I'm very aware of my old white maleness, but I will say radical candor is not something I expect from a room of females. Sorry if I've offended anybody, but I love the fact that the females you're working with, and I'm assuming again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming the females you're working with are the ones who say, no, we love Hold the Fluff.
Right. And I am a Midwest born and raised woman. So I grew up, you know, in Missouri and Kansas. And when somebody introduced the phrase Midwest nice to me, I thought, oh my goodness, I am doing myself and everyone such a disservice by living in this, you know, trying to be nice quadrant and not really having critical conversations, tough conversations with my team.
Well, and the whole thing is that you can have those conversations and you don't have to be unkind about them, but you can be very fluffless about them. If you need it by Friday, that's not a, well, you know, maybe it could be Saturday. No, I need it by Friday at 3 o'clock because I'm getting on a plane and I'm flying and I want to review it on the plane. So Friday, 3 o'clock. I would say it that way. And I live in a house with three daughters and my wife and two female dogs. When I say stuff that way, I'm accused of yelling. And I'm like, I'm not yelling. I like to say, I'm being definitive. I need it by 3 o'clock on Friday. Stop yelling at me. I'm not yelling at you. I'm being definitive. That's Hold the Fluff, right?
Absolutely. And it's something that I'm proud of, that other women in our organization, other, you know, everybody in our organization can be proud of, because in startup world, things quickly change. You know, there will be conflict. There will be healthy conflict. And that's how we are figuring out how to deliver these services most effectively and to communicate with our consumers most effectively. We really have to begin that in our organization.
Well, and that's key. I mean, being able to, especially in a startup, there's no room, there's no fat. A fat organization, you can deal with, oh, well, next week's good enough. It's like, no, we have to have it now. Why? Because the money runs out in 3 days. We need it now. You know, I don't know about you, but I've had times where I'm presenting a proposal. I'm working on that proposal until it's done so I can get it to them as soon as possible, because even 2 days could be in a different billing cycle. And that, like, if they approve it, I do it and it gets in a different billing cycle, that might be 180 days out before I get paid. No, no, no. There is not a moment to be lost when it comes to certain things. And I love that fact, because I love phrases like that, Hold the Fluff, because that phrase will now have internal meaning that develops richness and lore over time so that it is part of your brand. If you said, we're innovative, we're caring, we're best practices oriented, you would be just like any other company that created their brand by committee. Hold the Fluff is a term that people get tattooed on their forearm because they believe it and they love it. So I love that phrase. I love students first. And I love the boldness of the word bold. So boom, you got your key three right there, Emily. Whether you like it or not, it's students first, bold, Hold the Fluff.
Thank you for the consulting.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope it was consulting, not insulting, because I have been known to do the latter rather than the former. I'm talking with Emily Smith, the CEO and founder of Teleteachers, which is a really interesting concept for speech language teletherapy. And I want to thank you again for being on this, because I talk to experts all day long. I love to talk to the people who are actually in the field, talking to their specific audiences and seeing how their brand can be the one point from which any story can be told. And we've identified three distinct audiences for you so far. I'm sure there are more. You know, I really, really thank you for coming on the podcast and wish you the best of luck with Teleteachers. If you are a school district professional out there, you need to check out teleteachers.com on the old internets and find out more about this fantastic new way to get world-class quality speech therapy for your school district at a fraction of the cost of hiring someone to live locally and do the schlep from school to school to school to school. So once again, I'm DP Knutton for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast and Nonfiction Brandversity, the free Facebook group. I invite you all to join. Just ask to join the group and you're in, guaranteed. And she is
Emily Smith.
Thanks everybody for listening. Talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.